Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May 16th, 2014. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my guest co-host, Carissa Thorpe.
Hello.
Can you say that again?
Hello.
Yeah, you weren't on the air. I think you've got to move to another mic here. Okay. Awesome. So, Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. So it's International Respect for Chickens Month this month, and for our first segment, we'll be discussing some amazing facts about the cognitive abilities of chickens. When you say the term bird brain, what exactly does that mean? Well, we'll be finding that out. And on last week's episode of Animal Voices, we presented a feature on the straight edge movement. Now, this week, we get a little less edgy and just a little more tipsy, but let's not forget about the animals while we indulge. Did you know that your favorite beverage of choice might have more than just alcohol in it? That's right. Brewmasters, winemakers, and distillers sometimes include animal ingredients in their products directly, or they might use them in the processing and filtration. Tim caught up with Jason from Barnivore to talk about vegan alcohol. Based in Toronto, Barnivore is a hugely popular website and app that shows which alcohol is vegan and animal friendly. That interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned. And so we have former Animal Voices host Carissa Thorpe. She's guest hosting for us today. And Carissa, you've been up to quite a few things lately, and you've got some really cool endeavors coming out. So tell us about them, please.
I have. I'm almost done journalism school, and I've been working on a few things. One of the things that I'm hopefully going to be able to contribute to the show in the future is I've been starting to interview people about their transition stories of how they went vegan for a project that I'm
awesome.
Calling How I Vegan.
How I Vegan. Is that grammatically correct?
No.
Okay. Got it. It was the website URL that was free, right?
Yeah. And then a couple of other things that I'm doing are I'm just in the process right now, like literally right now, of starting up a meetup group called Harmless Fun, which will just be for animal rights activists and vegans and vegetarians and anyone who's veg curious to sort of get together and hang out. There will definitely be postings of the like protests and activism around town, but also just general things like going hiking or bowling or ice skating or things like that, or trips to Portland for Veg Fest and all that kind of stuff.
You know, I think that's something that we're actually lacking here, because we have a lot of just veg meetups, like mm-hmm. vegan meetups that are dinners that you can go to, usually food related, not a lot of stuff. Next to none, I would say, of just social gatherings. So
yeah.
I'd actually be really interested in participating in that. And you're saying it's for vegetarians and vegans, right?
And then any, like, bring your friends. Like,
yeah,
they
totally.
Don't have to be vegan or vegetarian. It would just be, just don't bring any meat to a meetup
right.
because it's harmless.
Harmless fun, not harmful fun.
Yeah.
That's a different meetup on
yes.
there. What I like about that specifically, Carissa, is that when I want to go out and do stuff, I want to be in an environment where I know I'm not going to have to sort of, I guess, like, interact with that cruelty and violence that,
yeah.
you know, that people like us see when we see someone eating a ham sandwich. It's not just they're eating their lunch, it's they're eating death. So,
yeah.
So I really appreciate that endeavor, and I really look forward. And you said you're going to be starting it ASAP, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So by the end of the show. You should be able to go to meetup.com and search Harmless
okay,
Fun.
Harmless Fun in Vancouver.
Yes.
Okay. So, Vegan summer camp, what's that all about?
That is something that I've been sort of thinking about for, I guess, a few years, and it didn't really crystallize until I went to Vita Vegan Con last year, and I just felt like it would have been so cool if we had all been, like, in the same place together.
And, I was there.
Yeah. but everybody was spread kind
right.
of across the city.
Right.
And, like,
oh, I see what you're saying. Staying,
different
yeah.
hotels and hostels and staying on people's couches and stuff, and it kind of just really inspired me to get everybody together in one place outdoors. And we live in such a beautiful place here in BC.
Definitely.
And I just really want to share that with everybody else. So my intention had been to rent out a hostel this year, but I just didn't have the funds to get that going. So now my backup plan is I'm going to try to just do sort of like a first time, low budget, everybody in a tent, find a campsite, or if somebody has like private property that we could rent, like a farm or something, it would be really cool to just get maybe like 50 to 60 people together.
All in one tent?
No.
I've done 12 people in a tent before, but 50 to 60.
In individual tents,
okay.
Or a few people in a tent. Maybe
several
not.
Tents.
12
Got it.
Is probably
Got it.
Too much.
Thanks for the clarification there.
And then just do some cool stuff, like have campfire, of course, with vegan s'mores. And then we can do some of what I see vegan summer camp as eventually, and what I'd like to see some of that this year is sort of different workshops and things where we teach each other skills that are useful as vegans, and they don't necessarily have to be vegan skills. Like learning how to knit would be a cool thing if we can
with
all just
vegan
share
yarn.
Yeah,
that's
just
cool.
Sort of sharing our skill sets and different things like that. So you can go to wordpress.com/vegansummercamp for more information about the camp.
That sounds really awesome. And you were saying before, I like the how you've like you've been thinking about every single little detail going down to the marshmallows, because there's we have a marshmallow conundrum here in Vancouver. What's that exactly?
We only get, for some reason, the only vegan marshmallows that are available are small dandies, and
yeah.
You can't make s'mores with that. Like, how do you roast a tiny marshmallow? It would probably just melt on your stick. So
yeah, so
I plan to go down to the States and stock up on some of the larger marshmallows.
Awesome. Yeah. And actually, maybe I know like stores like Whole Foods now in Vancouver, they sell the little dandies now. So maybe it's also a matter of requesting as well, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So I just think that's a really awesome idea. And to have the sort of prototype of what you want to, like,
yeah.
That's what I'm calling it for what you're doing. When is that going to be this year? Did you say?
Hopefully the end of August is my plan.
And what's the location that you're looking at?
I'd like to go somewhere between Vancouver and Pemberton, but
okay.
I'm open to like anywhere that's within about 2 to 3 hours of Vancouver, just so it's not too crazy for people to get to.
Yeah. So you better start like, or you're going to put that on Harmless Fun, aren't
yes.
you? That, I
yeah.
get that. I see where the two tie in. So now that Harmless Fun's going to be on meetup.com by the end of the show today, one of the first things
yeah.
I think you would be putting on there is the vegan summer camp prototype or beta
yeah.
vegan summer camp
yes.
or whatever you want to call it.
I think beta is the right word. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for sharing. And it's good to have you back here. We were trying to think of when the last time was that you were here, maybe once last fall and then
yeah.
maybe once or twice in the summer. So thanks for being available today. And yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Awesome.
Radio Vancouver. Local and not so local music. A music show that tells you where and when you can see and hear live music. With band dates, live musical guests, and a few surprises too. Radio Vancouver, Wednesdays 3:30 to 5. It doesn't just play music and go home, it's out there absorbing it. Experience Vancouver on Facebook at facebook.com/Vancouver. Radio Vancouver, Wednesdays 3:30 to 5 p.m. on Co-op Radio. It's
some upcoming animal rights event highlights for the next couple of weeks here are tonight, Direct Action Everywhere presents It's Not Food, It's Violence, a protest outside of Chipotle Mexican Grill at 818 Howe Street, which is between Robson and Smythe, and it starts at 6 p.m. The chain has earned praise for its claims that humane treatment of animals slaughtered for the meals that it serves, which activists are aiming to unmask for what it really is, murder, but just by another name. The Facebook event, sorry, one second. The Facebook event listing reads, "The corporations that profit from their death want you to believe that the animals killed for food lived a beautiful life and died a peaceful death, but unfathomable brutality hides behind their closed doors and corporate masks.
Yeah, we actually had an interview with, I think, sort of the person who has been coordinating these around, I guess, around the world, or at least North America, and that was quite interesting. But have you attended one of these yet?
I haven't, but I know a lot of people who have, and I've heard good
things. Well, most of the people on this show have been there, and I'm going tonight, actually, for my first time, so I'm really looking forward to that. It's the first time they're doing it on a Friday. That's Friday tonight at 6 p.m. So if people aren't familiar, like, there's videos on YouTube, and actually I'll be the one taking the video tonight at my very first one, because I volunteered to do that. So what we do is, what we're going to be doing is protesting the fact that Chipotle actively promotes the fact that they apparently are using humane methods and humane meat. And of course, we know there's no such thing as having meat that's humane, because the process of slaughter is just so inflicted with violence and cruelty. And for them to actually, you know, purport that it's the opposite of that, it's something that the activists there and myself take issue with. So we'll be there tonight just after 6 p.m. at Chipotle. It's on Howe Street downtown here in Vancouver.
Yeah, it's right near Chapters. It's like around the corner from
right.
It.
Right. And yeah. And then there will be a video on YouTube, most likely, I guess, by today or tomorrow, whenever I get that up there. So, yeah, there's lots of other videos as well. They take a video every single time they do it, I think. And once, I think the videographer got punched in the face. So I hope that doesn't happen to me. Yeah.
Wear a mask.
Moving on.
Is that every week that they do a protest?
It's once a month. Usually, yeah. Okay. So this is the one for this month, and it's May, and I'm glad I can make it. So
cool. And next Saturday, May 24th, a major protest is planned against the Vancouver Aquarium's outdated and inhumane continuation of holding whales and dolphins in captivity. Empty the Tanks is the second annual worldwide protest against marine mammals in captivity, and it's a rally cry to finally put an end to the practice in Vancouver. Reports have circulated that the Vancouver Aquarium intends to acquire more cetaceans, and even Vancouver Mayor Gregor Robertson has spoken out against the aquarium, along with several park board commissioners. The protest takes place outside the Vancouver Aquarium at 845 Avison Way in Stanley Park, starting at 2 p.m. The start time is to allow for people to take part in the March Against Monsanto, another worldwide protest planned for downtown that convenes at the Vancouver Art Gallery at 10 a.m. against the proliferation of genetically modified organisms in our food.
So we are actually having a special themed show for Empty the Tanks on our show next week, the day before this worldwide protest. So look for that, Animal Voices, next Friday, May the 23rd. This event's on May 24th. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be there. You're going to be there. And I think there's going to be actually hundreds of people there. I think this is a great opportunity. I know a lot of people who don't identify as being animal activists, they might be actually really interested. There's a lot of people who don't identify as being animal activists, but who really do, you know, after being exposed to films like The Cove and Blackfish, they're realizing now that they don't want animals in captivity. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of like why there's so much interest in these events. And even here in Vancouver, it's going to be huge. Be there next Saturday at 2 p.m., right?
Yeah.
It's if you possibly can make it, because I think we really need the numbers out there to make a statement to the city, to show the city that this is an antiquated practice to have these animals in captivity, and that we want them out there exactly to empty the tanks, which is the message of the whole demo.
Absolutely. And speaking of Blackfish, Liberation BC presents a free screening of the acclaimed documentary in the Alice McKay Room at the Central Branch of the Vancouver Public Library at 7 p.m. on Thursday, May 29th. Blackfish tells the story of Tilikum, a performing whale who killed several people while in captivity. This emotionally wrenching, tautly structured story challenges us to consider our relationship to nature and reveals how little we humans have learned from these highly intelligent and enormously sentient fellow mammals. Please arrive early, as seating is limited and often fills up for such free screenings.
Yeah, so Blackfish, as we were just talking about, it's really a must-see film, I think, for just really most people out there who would even ever consider buying a ticket to go into one of these, what are they called, sea animal entertainment facilities, like the Vancouver Aquarium and like SeaWorld and all these other places. Tilikum used to live at the place in Victoria before he got transported off. And definitely, if you have seen it too, bring a friend. If you can, because we need to get that message out there again.
And Blackfish has been a really big motivator for, I know there were a lot of, I think SeaWorld was doing some sort of like major concert festival and like,
yeah, everyone pulled out.
Yeah, everybody pulled out.
Except for one person, I think, who I can't remember who it was, who said they agreed with SeaWorld, but yeah. Most people are not. And the thing is that even if these major musicians, even if they're kind of sort of on the fence or undecided, the thing that's going to tip them over into being against SeaWorld and wanting to perform there is their fans.
Yeah.
When the people put petitions on the internet asking these certain musicians to back down from these performances.
I think it started with the Bare Naked Ladies. There was a petition because it was somebody from their hometown asked them not to, and they decided not to. And then from there, it kind of just domino effect, and most people pulled out except, I forget who the one person was, but
But anyways, that is definitely, petitions work sometimes, right? Well, thank you so much for the events. If you have an event that you would like to have advertised on the show, you can send us an email, radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post a little message on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver. So it's International Respect for Chickens Month, and this month we've been celebrating these fascinating feathered creatures to give them the respect that they deserve. I myself grew up with chickens, and my respect for chickens was largely cultivated just by observing them as a child and watching them do their thing, that is being chickens, and growing to appreciate them and observing their special behaviors and nuances that I now so naturally identify as being the true nature of chickens, from their amazing dust bathing techniques to the way they move their bodies and heads when pecking and scratching in the ground for food, to the process of laying eggs and nurturing their babies when they are born. And so I know that most people are just so disconnected with animals and nature, and the only connection that they usually have with an animal is when they see his or her dead body on their plate for dinner, and they never got to know that animal when he or she was alive, and therefore often ignorantly apply negative attributes that supposedly originate from these animals when referring to humans, such as calling people bird brain. As you know, I've heard and read so many people say that chickens are stupid, and nothing could be further from the truth. I know that from firsthand experience, and that's what I want to talk about today. I want to dispel that myth. I want to give credit where credit is deserved, and that is for the amazing cognitive abilities of chickens. So there's a great article in All Animals magazine that recently came out called Who You Calling a Bird Brain? It's by Ruth Ann Johnson, and it's a perfect source to draw from to give some examples illustrating just how smart chickens are. So, did you know that chickens communicate with more than 24 vocalizations, each with a different meaning?
I didn't until I read this, and I thought that was very interesting. That's quite a few that you wouldn't really expect.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you think of a chicken making a vocalization, okay, so this is where we didn't rehearse this. This is where we're going to do, like, our stereotypical chicken vocalization. I'll start. So this is what I grew up hearing chickens be like. Bawk, 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 bawk. And you, Carissa?
Bawk, 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 bawk.
Yep, that's one, too. Actually, I would say those are two different vocalizations. So there we go. We've got two out of 24. So even before hatching, chicks are talking to their mother. Certain peeps will tell her that they're cold, prompting her to turn or move the egg in the nest, and a purring-like sound lets her know that they are comfortable. Now, chickens also use different calls to alert each other of predators, and that's something that you might, like, that might be easy to believe, and I know I believe it myself, because I remember when we had chickens, right, and they were in the yard, and I remember they used to make very distinct calls when cats were around, because, you know, the neighborhood cats would always, like, prey on them, and you would see them, like, sneaking up, sort of, like, in the bush or up on the fence and that, but they never actually did anything to them, and I remember it was more of like a bawk, 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 like really loud, intense, loud, probably because they were warning the other chickens that what was going to be happening, that there was a predator in the area.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, because then they could probably all get together, and if there's like 10 chickens versus one cat, you have a better chance of survival, right?
Well, that's what happens in the wild with the wildebeest. I know that. It's always like the last, it's always the weakest one that gets caught, and usually, and then the rest of them get away. They show frustration by pacing back and forth and voicing longer whiny calls punctuated by staccato-like sounds, which is actually common behavior in factory farm settings where they're pushed and squished into these battery cages with less than a square sheet of papers worth of space to basically live live in for the entirety of their lives. So also, as you might guess, because I think that all animals teach their children this, hens actively teach their young skills, such as foraging and avoiding predators. So when I read that, I thought, well, of course they do, because, yeah. You know, that is the way of the animal, right? Including human animals, is we have to teach our young how to survive in this crazy world, right? So I'll give you some examples, though. When a mother's hen sends out her food call, there's a call to say, hey, there's food. Her chicks respond by pecking at the ground. Also, there's a study that I've read before. It says that hens were given good food that was red colored and bad food that was blue colored. And when the hens saw their chicks eating the wrong colored food, you know, the bad food, they began scratching, pecking, and vocalizing to convey the perceived error. And also, chicks also learn alarm calls from their mother, and they know when to come running when they hear that call. And that all totally makes sense to me. You know, again,
that's like when your mom calls you for dinner when you're a kid, right?
Exactly. It's the same thing. Dinner time, it could be like, bawk, 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 bawk. You know, that's dinner time. And then they come running. Chickens are sharp observational learners. Well, I would have to say, yeah, totally. Like that from my experience, I can see that. And just any animal. And just, again, I think we really underestimate the abilities of animals, and all animals, not just chickens. But yeah. I'll give you some examples here for chickens are sharp observational learners. So in one study, says here, chicks avoided pecking a bitter tasting substance after observing the responses of other chicks. Well, wouldn't you do that if, you know, someone took a bite of some, I don't know, tofu that had gone bad and spit it out and went, ew, that's gross. you're not going to eat it yourself, right? Same with baby chicks. Actually, that is kind of impressive because they're just chicks, but still, you know, yeah. they're just babies. They are tiny little babies. Actually, probably human babies wouldn't even be smart enough to do that.
They
would
I don't
just
think so.
They wouldn't pick up on that cue.
Well, I mean, human babies put everything in their mouths. Like yeah. anything you find on the ground, they put it in their mouth.
Yeah, but even just like seeing, you know, if their mom like spit it out and went, mm-hmm. ew, gross, they might still eat it. Like I could totally see that happening. So, you know, as I said, I don't think we should be surprised about these things. And it's a matter of survival, right? So this is an interesting story. This person named Dave Polly, he's from HSUS, Humane Society for the United States. He's been rescuing chickens for 20 years. And he says it doesn't take long for the new arrivals to fall in line. They follow other hens as he calls, bawk, 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 for feeding time, while another call, which is a rolling bee sound, I imagine sounding something like boop. Can't really do that very well. He makes with his tongue. That corrals them into the coop. He says it only takes about 2 days to learn the routine, not necessarily from me, but also from the other chickens. And also when he lays out deep wood ash for dust bathing, the newbies stand off to the side. I can see that because they wouldn't know what the wood ash is for, because mm-hmm. that's not a natural substance that they would normally dust bathe in. But they watch the experienced hens walk in and lie down, fluff their wings out, and lie out on their side to get the dust everywhere on their body, and only then will the new hens take their turn. So again, they're taking those physical cues from their colleagues, their chicken colleagues and comrades, and seeing what they do. So so chicken see, chicken do, I guess. But yeah. Same goes for every animal, really. Chickens have a knack for remembering people, places, and things even after months apart. So imagine that. Again, I think we give chickens and all animals far less credit than they deserve. And again, of course they do. But here's another story from this article. So another person from HSUS, John Goodwin, he remembers cleaning the mud-caked feathers of a rescued hen during a cockfighting raid in Wisconsin, and later at the temporary shelter, she acted noticeably different than the other more tentative hens. Whenever he walked by, she'd stand in front of her enclosure looking up at him with wide eyes, making friendly noises. And this person, John Goodwin, he works to combat cockfighting in the U.S. He also recalls how his mother's pet rooster Henry would come running when they called his name. Yeah, totally. I've told this story on the show before. We had a pet chicken called Willie that mm-hmm. when I was a kid growing up, she used to live on the street. So like not in our yard, like our other chickens, like she was our first chicken, and we just kind of like used to let her out, and we had a very friendly street, and she would never go really further more than two houses either way. And whenever we'd want to call her, like it was time to come home for bed or mealtime or whatever, this is me as a kid, I'd go, wheelie, 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 wheelie. And she would just come, like, wherever she was, if she was, like, dust bathing or pecking or whatever, having a good time wherever she was, she would just come running down the street. Yeah, she totally knew her name. Of course she did. Her name was Willie. So there we go. So chickens are capable of solving complex problems, counting and using geometry, and even at a very young age. So this is actually, I know I've been saying, well, of course they do, duh, you know, but this one's actually quite impressive to me, I should say. So in one test, 5-day-old chicks showed off their ability to identify a target based on its numerical place in a series of 10. This is 5-day-old chicks, babies. The chicks were presented with a row of identical holes, one of which contained food, and when the apparatus was rotated, they were still able to return to the designated hole. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, like, try getting any of that out of a human baby. That's not happening.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen. A human baby, especially
five days old,
completely unaware. And these are those adorable little baby chicks. A couple shows ago, we had a show that was just dedicated to the baby chicks. And I hope you can listen to that. It was, just check on our website, animalvoices.org. And I love baby chicks. I mean, I love chickens. And baby chicks are the most amazing little creatures. And I think I just think that because they're just so perfect. You know, when they're hatched, they're just these amazing little creatures that came out of an egg. They're so perfect. They're so adorable. They're so innocent. They're so good. And they do not deserve that the lives that they're normally given, often, which is being ground up alive immediately, being a day old. As you can see, they have the capacity for thinking complex thoughts at 5 days old, and they really, really do deserve more respect than what they're getting. Here's another example. In a clicker training program, chickens were taught to consistently peck at one of 4 geometric shapes, even as the order of shapes changed. And this example actually makes me think of Little Miss Sunshine, who I was telling you about. You don't know about her yet, Carissa, but I posted a video off YouTube of Little Miss Sunshine on our Facebook page yesterday. So check that out, Animal Voices Vancouver. If you don't know who I'm talking about yet, Little Miss Sunshine is the most adorable rescued battery hen who lives at Edgar's Mission Farm Sanctuary in Australia. And there's a video online. I wonder if it's gone viral. It just shows the capability. It's to educate people on the capabilities of chickens, just as we're doing today. So the lady at the sanctuary, she says to Little Miss Sunshine, okay, come over here. And she's got these colored discs, these discs with pictures on them of different farm animals. And she puts them out on the table one by one. She goes, are you a pig? Puts it out. Are you a goat? She puts that out. Are you a cow, or are you a chicken? She puts them all out, different pictures of these animals. This is amazing. Every single time, Little Miss Sunshine, she pecks on the chicken disc. Like, I can keep watching this video over and over. It's just fascinating to me. And the thing is she keeps doing it. Like, she mixes them around, like, you know, totally mixing them around. This chicken is not noticing, just sort of like, I don't even know how she does it the first time, but even when they're mixed around, she is noticing the picture. Mm-hmm. And actually, that to me shows self-awareness. Like, when I've had dogs, like, they don't even, like, really, like, notice, like, their own image in a mirror on another dog on the TV. But Little Miss Sunshine does. And I just think that's just amazing. Like, you've got to see this video. It's on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. I think it's going to be going up on our website too, animalvoices.org. And it's just so fascinating. And Little Miss Sunshine is just she is a ray of sunshine to me. Like, I think people will really appreciate chickens after seeing this. So I had mentioned that they know geometry as well. And this one's really interesting as well. So chickens have been observed where grasshoppers are going. They've also been observed where grasshoppers are going to land when hunting them. So instead of running to catch the grasshopper in flight, as you think, like, that might be their natural instinct, right? They run to where the grasshopper is going to land, and they do it with precision. Mm-hmm. That's geometry. So yeah, so that's quite impressive myself. I think myself, like, that is you know,
I have trouble doing that when taking pictures. Like, you're supposed to take a picture where you know that it's going to be.
Yeah, and they do it, like I said, like, they do it with precision. So that's pretty neat. And yeah, and then just one more quick story here. Chickens plan ahead and they take into account prior experience and knowledge of a situation. So there's a display called tidbitting in which roosters will vocalize while picking up and dropping food to alert the hens in his group, right, that they've found something good to eat. And this is a way of elevating their status to the hens because the roosters want the hens, right? Mm. And the hens then see him doing that and they'll go running to their prize. And sometimes, though, the roosters, they'll only pretend to tidbit, that is, they'll phantom tidbit, and they'll eat the food first, but then they'll, like, pretend they have some food, and then the chickens come running. But that's kind of sneaky. But yeah, so anyways, those are just, you know, some examples, many more. The next time you think about calling someone a bird brain, think again, it's actually quite a compliment, I would say. And speaking of intelligence, you know, there's also emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is you know, it's just another kind of intelligence that need be recognized in the animal world. And we have a beautiful clip to share with you from the film Peaceable Kingdom, which illustrates the emotional intelligence between a mother hen and her chicks. And Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home, it's a documentary that explores the awakening conscience of several people who grew up in a traditional farming culture and who have now come to question the basic assumptions of their way of life. So here's a clip for you.
To have this deep feeling that they're sentient beings and they're no longer this commodity that you make money from was such a turnaround. And we decided we were going to really try to understand the lives of these animals.
Hello, little chick.
Like the chicken with her chick. If they're allowed to raise the babies up, there's that evidence of nurturing where the mother teaches her baby to scratch. And when there's a tasty morsel, she'll cluck to the baby. And the baby will come over and start eating. I'll sometimes feed canned corn to the chickens and the ducks, and they love the canned corn. And the mother hen won't eat it. She'll pick it up and she'll drop it. And then the baby will come over and she'll consume it. And then kind of peek back in her little way. The baby will cuddle up to mom, will go under the feathers and just kind of peek out at the world and learn from mom and become a part of the flock. And if there's any sign of danger, the baby will go right underneath the mother, and the mother will always protect the baby. And it just goes on day in and day out as the baby grows.
Well, that was pretty amazing. And that concludes our little segment this week for International Respect for Chickens Month. So we've got some news for you. As you may have heard in recent weeks, Hanny, the Siberian tiger, suddenly died at only age 2 at the Greater Vancouver Zoo on April 30th. She was found dead in her cage, and staff said that she had appeared healthy but had lost her appetite the day before. Well, now the necropsy has been done, and heart failure is being blamed for her death. Veterinarian Dr. Bruce Burden said necropsy results reveal there was an accumulation of fluid and fibrin in her chest. He said this pathological finding is most often caused by an infection. However, upon closer inspection, this turned out not to be the case in Hanny, and said she died of significant left-sided heart failure, which vets believe is the result of a disease called cardiomyopathy. So, you know, just the story, this was a very brief story on CBC, but it really makes me wonder about the premature cause of this animal's death. And she was only 2 years old. Apparently, the average life expectancy pregnancy of a Siberian tiger in captivity and in the wild is about 14 years old. And a bit more of other sad local news. Whiffen, a sea otter at the Vancouver Aquarium, has also died. Whiffen was a sea otter rescued from a spit of land near Souk this February. He was named Whiffen after the spot where he was discovered. Whiffen was an 8-year-old sea otter, emaciated and hypoglycemic with high liver enzymes when he was rescued, with also a damaged gastrointestinal tract and wounded hind leg. He was transferred to the Vancouver Aquarium for treatment and rehabilitation, and he died last Saturday while undergoing an MRI. The Vancouver Aquarium's public statement said the scan was intended to discover why the sea otter was still not gaining weight, had progressive muscle loss, had tremors, weakness, and was not getting better.
Then all the animals wade in and gorge themselves on the rotting fruit. It starts fermenting in their tummies and turns into a very potent brew. So on the way home, things start happening to them.
Joining us today is Jason from Barnivore. He's going to talk all about making compassionate choices when it comes to alcohol. Many people are surprised to learn that many alcohol products contain or were produced with animal parts. Tim had a chance to speak with Jason from Barnivore, and he asked how Barnivore got started.
So Barnivore came about around... Barnivore itself didn't exist until 2008, but it actually, the list started around 2002. I'd been volunteering with a local vegetarian association, the Toronto Vegetarian Association, and their resource center, and we knew that a lot of alcohols had animal ingredients either directly in them or used in the processing, but there really wasn't any kind of list anywhere. And around, I kept talking about it and talking about it, and around 2002, my partner Angela decided to call a couple companies, which seems like the obvious thing to do, but I just never got around to it. And next thing I know, I had like 10 or so listings, and I was running a different website at the time, so I published them there. And the list kind of grew from there, and eventually Barnivore kind of became the ultimate home for that kind of stuff, because it just got too big to hold anywhere else.
Oh, yeah, that's really awesome. So yeah, I've been doing that for really quite a long time now.
It started off with just basically me looking into the things that I was interested in, and then we quickly realized that there's a lot of alcohol out there, and the way that alcohol is regulated in, from country to country and state to state or province to province, the availability really changes. So people in, say, California would be interested in some product that I'd never even heard of and couldn't even get, so it's not something I'm going to go out and seek out. So we switched the model over time where people would go and seek out the information themselves, and we'd help with that with some standardized questions and things so we can get some consistent information. And now we've got submissions from all around the world coming in, and just trying to keep up with that is a fun task for Sarah.
Yeah, no doubt. So do you have an overview of how many like international requests you have? Like, I was happy to find out, first of all, that Barnivore is a Canadian website, because usually when you find resource guides, they're all aimed at the US market. And it's really good that to see that you have it offered for all over the world. But are people really using it from all over the world?
As far as I can tell, yeah, it's pretty funny when we've got Sarah actually does the bulk of the work taking the submissions and putting them into the system and evaluating them and all that. Whenever I do it, I'd see a new product or a new beer and I'd say, oh, that looks interesting, and then I'd try and find out if it's available here. We're in Ontario, and, you know, sure, the odds would be about, you know, 20% that something would be showing up, and I'd say, oh, that looks so good, like it's a chocolate stout or something, and I'm so excited, and then I can't get it. I've planned so many virtual road trips that way. So, you know, the bulk of our usage, it pretty much follows
the usual internet patterns. The United States is big, Europe is big, but Canada does see a pretty good presence.
Can you give a summary for our listeners about the kind of animal products that are used in alcohol production?
Sure. Without getting into too much technical details, because I get a little lost in there too, to be honest, you know, there's two main things you've got to look out for. One is the semi-obvious thing, although it's not obvious to everybody, that there might be animal products just directly as an ingredient in there. I mean, the easiest one is like a creme de menthe kind of liquor or liqueur, where there's actual cream in the product, and people sometimes think it's just the name, but quite often there's actual like dairy in the alcohol, and that's more common in the liqueurs where you've got a broader range of recipes that come around. But on the beer side, a honey ale would be a good example where honey is actually used in the product. When you get to the processing, that's where it gets a little trickier. So during the production of the product, whether it's a beer, a wine, or a liquor, a company might use various techniques to get impurities out of the product, and this is often called fining, the technical term on that. And that's by putting in what's called a fining agent, which would, just to dumb it down a little bit, it kind of globs onto the impurities and makes them easier to filter them out, or it might make them settle down to the bottom, or depending on their procedure. And some of the common things that can be used for that, isinglass is a big one. And again, that's one of those products where, oh, there's isinglass in that, but you don't realize what isinglass is, and it's derived from fish bladder.
Oh, wow.
Gelatin is also used. Egg whites, seashells, and other things like that are fairly common. Sometimes there's also stabilizers added to either change the way things foam or just mellow out the product or things like that. So a lot of different products can be added in there. And when the case of a fining agent, it's kind of a grayer area because it is technically filtered out as part of the process, because it's used to get the impurities out, and when you're done, you can argue whether or not the final product has any of that left in it. But you know, a lot of vegans would prefer to partake of products that don't have it involved in the first place. So on Barnivore, we keep track of what goes into it and how it's used when it's made, and then basically everything that touches the liquid along the way.
Right. Yeah, I before I knew Barnivore, I remember pretty vividly, I was at the BCL, local liquor store here, mm-hmm. the state liquor store, and I picked up a pack of Australian wine, and I was quite surprised to see that on the ingredients list, it actually said fish, and I was pretty disgusted by it, and that got me
kinda
thinking.
It kind of changes the nose of the drink, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I got me thinking, I was wondering if that's maybe because it is an Australian wine that they have it, that they have to declare it as an ingredient, even if it's not left in the wine, or if it's just their filtering process is in such a way that they can't get it all out, or if it's like an allergy warning. I'm not sure, but yeah, it was the first time that I ever saw it on a bottle. I guess most producers don't really advertise what they are using, right?
Yeah, labeling requirements have really changed and shifted over the years, and I'm not sure. It varies from region to region, and it might vary even insofar as if things are made for use internally or for export. So some products, yeah, you do see that some kind of a warning, and I think a lot of that comes down to allergens for most people. But the problem is that, you know, if you see something like fish on a label, then great, you know that fish was used in the production of the product. If you don't see it, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. It might mean that there's none, it might mean that there was and they didn't label it, all kinds of things on there. Similarly, it is possible there's, every once in a while they pop up, there's wines that are actually labeled as vegan right on the label, which is a great trend. But again, if a company decides to put that on there, that's great. But if they didn't put it on there, it doesn't mean that it's not. It just means that they didn't put it on the label.
Yeah, absolutely. So have you, I know that most of your website is contributed by its users, and everybody is welcome to inquire with companies and submit these links. But do you know if there's a general trend in what kind of fining agents producers use? Or like, are they slowly moving away from these animal products? Or like, what is the general reaction when you inquire about these things? Are people reserved about this, or are they very open? Do you see there's like a common pattern or something?
Well, I don't track the actual trends just because we don't have a complete list of every product that's out there. When we get new submissions in that things are either vegan friendly or they're not, that just is a trend for the given day and just luck of the draw as opposed to an overall industry trend. I hint that it's very not fun when we get a company actually contacting us saying, hey, we've changed our production methods. Can you update your site and open us up to the vegan world? And that does happen from time to time, and that's great news. But it, trend-wise, I don't know what's happening there. When it comes down to companies disclosing this information, we've tested and tweaked. We have there's a section on the website called Ask a Company where you can cut and paste a question. So if you've got a favorite beer or wine or liquor that you'd like to know more about, whether because it's not on Barnivore already or because it's on Barnivore and the information's a little old and you'd like to help out by getting it more recent, we try to be careful to question it with specifics of what we're looking for. So if you just email a company there saying, hey, is your stuff vegan? That might not get an entirely accurate answer. They might not think about the finding products. They might have a different idea what vegans are. They might think vegans eat fish. You know, so yeah. It does change a lot on there. So we try to specify animal ingredients with examples and go. It's because we've found also some companies are hesitant to classify, and we'll get some kind of hedged answers that come back from time to time where we don't use any of these products, but we don't certify our product as vegan along the way just because they don't want to be open to some kind of a lawsuit or whatever. They don't want to be committing to something that they don't fully understand. So the answer is generally, yeah, we're fine, but we're not going to actually use the V word, if you will.
Right, right. Yeah, I understand. I'm just curious because I know a friend of mine, she contacted several local breweries here in Vancouver, like many small microbreweries popping up, and some seem to be really receptive to that and say like, oh yeah, it's like we do whatever we can, while others were really defensive and saying like, no, we need these animal finding agents, mm-hmm. and without these we can't make proper beer and stuff like that. So
yeah, and you know, and that's one of the greatest things about the craft brewing movement overall, I think, is that, you know, the people that make the smaller beers and stuff are very passionate about what they do. When that happens to line up with what we do, then that's great. Other times it's a little more unfortunate, but yeah, you definitely do get some strong opinions coming back on there. But the other nice thing is that I find that smaller breweries are much more likely to respond one way or the other just because they like to share what they do, and they got into this because they've got a passion for beer.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you also know if there's a good resource for that you could give to companies? Here, these are alternatives you could be looking into, or like, say you get a negative response back, and like, how to reply to that, or do you usually like leave it as is?
We haven't really developed any kind of resource kit just because we don't have resources ourselves to get around to it. We do encourage people to get back, and I think on the website as well, there's a couple of cut and paste things to say, no, thanks very much, but, you know, if they are vegan, then that's great. Thanks so much for supporting veganism. And if they're not, you know, I'm disappointed to hear that, and I understand, blah, blah, blah. But we don't have any real data on how many people are doing that, as well as what the feedback is on that kind of thing. But I find just the fact that, and this is more of my general theory, but I think it holds up, that the more people we can get asking companies about their production, the more that they'll become aware of it. This is something that consumers care about, and there's a subset of the market that they can be better addressing.
Yeah, that's true. I guess in that sense, in that spirit, it might make sense if you see a company on your website that is not vegan friendly to ask them again, to just show that there's demand there, right?
Absolutely.
So, I noticed also on your website you say certain drinks are vegetarian friendly. You explain it in your FAQ, but could you rehash again why you chose that term, vegetarian friendly?
We do get the focus of Barnivore is basically what's in the bottle.
Right.
And from time to time, people will ask questions about the glue on the labels that go on the bottle, for example. Or another thing, you know, getting a little further beyond, if you use sugar in the beer, for example, or whatever, was that sugar then fined with something, and secondary ingredients and whatnot? So we've kind of tweaked our question over time to form a reasonable compromise, so we get as much information as we can. And if we ask really detailed stuff about their whole supply chain, the odds of getting a response at all is less. But what we do have a general policy for on Barnivore is to post all the relevant correspondence with each of these companies, and you can see the history of everything that they're answered. And you can take a look at that for a product and decide if that's up to your standards. And if that gives you enough information beyond just the red, yellow, green that we show as a general summary, you can go a little deeper. And if you want to find out more, then by all means, we've got the contact information, and you can get in touch with the company and address your specific concerns, and then, you know, share it with us, and we can share it with the rest of the world.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Do you know if there's any company, or any companies, beer, wine, or liquor, who are dedicatedly vegan, who say, yes, we really go all the way down to our supply chain, and we make sure that the glue is vegan and everything?
Sure. You see it more commonly with vineyards. So some organic wine companies will go and put it right in their marketing materials, right on their website. There are some that have a commitment to the production of their grapes. And, you know, with the vineyard, you've got a little more of an end-to-end chain right there. Like, you've got all the products on your farm quite often, so you can control that whole process. So generally, it definitely is more common with wine that you'll find out and out advertising as vegan.
Okay. One thing that is not covered on your website, I guess that would be a whole new barrel to open, so to speak, is our juices. Because juices are also often fined with animal products, right? Or cleared with animal products. So, have you thought about looking into that or including juices as well? Or
We get requests from time to time to kind of expand the scope, whether it's juices or non-alcoholic versions of products, things along that. And it comes down to just resources and focus. So we're just trying to do the best we can with alcoholic products. And going beyond that is just too much right now to take on.
Right. Oh, absolutely understandable. I mean, your website is already really extensive. So how do you support yourself? Who's behind Barnivore, and how is it run?
Well, Barnivore at this point doesn't make any money. So it's kind of just it's something that there is a gap in the community, and we're happy to provide it, and we're happy to continue it. But in terms of the cost of running it, whether it's for staff to update the data, servers and all that stuff, that just gets taken care of as part of a broader budget.
Oh, that's awesome. It's great to see this this commitment.
One of these days we'll crack the code and find a way to make it profitable, I guess, but it's not really a priority right now.
Yeah, it's there then a way for our listeners to support you, except of asking breweries and vineyards and submitting the data?
That's the biggest part, and then just generally spreading the word about Barnivore so that other people know. It amazes me that, it doesn't really amaze me, but it's one of those things, once you find out about something, you forget how you didn't know it before. And we've been doing this for so many years now, I guess 12, that every day there's new people out there who just find out that alcohol might not be entirely vegan, because it's not an obvious thing. So the first reaction is, oh, crap. And then the second reaction, hopefully, is, oh, wait, there's a website that'll help solve that problem. And there we go. We can continue on with our lives. So spreading the word and just sharing that information with other people is a great way to not just help us, but also to help other people.
Oh, there once was a monkey who tired of tea. So he set out one evening and climbed up a tree. He gave it a shake and he gave it a pound. And a torrent of rotten fruit rained to the ground. Now we're drunk.
We're drunk. We're drunk as candy. We're drunk as a skunk, as a drunk chimpanzee. There's an elephant's trunk or a cobra on me, but I can't tell you which, cause we're drunk as can be. Well, the fruit had fermented, and why was it good? 'Twas a feast to remember, if remember we could. In the morning we cradled our foreheads in pain, but before the day's end we were singing again. Now we're drunk, we're drunk, we're drunk as can be. We're drunk as a skunk, as a drunk chimpanzee. There's an elephant's trunk or a cobra on me, but I can't tell you which, cause we're drunk as can be. Now we're drunk, we're drunk, we're drunk as can be. We're drunk as a skunk, as a drunk chimpanzee. There's an elephant's trunk or a cobra on me, but I can't tell you which, cause we're drunk as can be.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Thank you so much to our guest co-host, Carissa.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so please join us for next week's show, which will be our Empty the Tank show, all about cetacean captivity and emptying the tanks of sea animal aquariums around the world, including the Vancouver Aquarium. And remember, there are demonstrations happening all over the world next Saturday, May 24th, to call for emptying the tanks. We here at the Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out our website, which is www.animalvoices.org, where our shows can also be downloaded from. Also, if you appreciate the work that we do here every week to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please do show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio. We do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. Whatever you can afford, $5, $10, $20, just go to cooperadio.org and click on Donate to Co-op Radio. And remember to indicate that it's going towards Animal Voices. Every little bit helps. It's tax deductible. We thank you so much for your assistance. So we're closing this show with a recording of a live and Canadian jazz song, Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens, sung by Emily Claire Barlow. Stay tuned now for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Ladies and gentlemen, here to perform Alex Kramer's Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens, an artist who recently received the Juno nomination for Female Vocalist of the Year at the National Jazz Awards. Please welcome Emily Claire Barlow.
One night, Farmer Brown was taking the air, locked up the barnyard with the greatest of care. Down in the hen house, something stirred. When he shouted, "Who's there?" this is what he heard. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So stop your fuss. Stop your fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. We chickens trying to sleep, and you butt in and holla, 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 holla with your chin. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't dust. We chickens trying to sleep and you butt in. Hobble, 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 hobble. It's a sin. Tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do. We got eggs to lay. We got ground to dig and worms to scratch. It takes a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So, write yourself, stop your fuss. There There ain't nobody here but us. Kindly point your gun the other way. Chicks to hatch. There ain't nobody here but us chickens.